Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. My next guest is Emily Badger, who writes about cities for the New York Times and has an article called Happy New Year, May Your City Never Become San Francisco, New York, or Seattle. Emily, Happy New Year to you. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. It's great to be here.
Let's start here in New York and then expand to your larger points. You note the concern around here that Amazon coming to Queens could turn New York into Seattle on steroids, as somebody put it. What is this Seattle on steroids dystopia?
Well, you know, Seattle is a place that has become incredibly expensive in a very short period of time. You know, 5-10 years ago, Seattle is not at all a city that other people look to as a cautionary tale. But the cost of housing there has risen faster than anywhere else in the country. The general cost of living has. And just sort of the visible makeup of the city has changed dramatically in a short period of time because there has been so much development, particularly in sort of the center of Seattle, and a lot of it tied to Amazon's growth there. So it was very curious to me to hear people in New York sort of afraid of becoming Seattle, because we often hear people in other cities afraid of becoming New York.
And at the same time, you note that Seattle is afraid of becoming San Francisco, and San Francisco is afraid of becoming New York. So let's go around the horn on those. Seattle afraid of becoming San Francisco. You do write that San Francisco has come to stand for the most specific set of modern urban horrors. How so?
You know, like Seattle, it's this place that has become incredibly expensive, but almost to a sort of absurd level. You know, San Francisco is a place right now where, because so little new housing has been built over decades, it is becoming virtually impossible for the middle class to live there, not just in the city itself, but within an hour and a half commute of the city. So today, San Francisco is this place where, you know, the ultra-wealthy can afford to live, but there is also this tremendous homeless problem in San Francisco. So you have this juxtaposition of tremendous poverty, a lot of poverty that also, you know, has elements of mental illness involved. And, you know, it coexists in the very same blocks, the very same parts of the city with, you know, these brand new gleaming office towers that have been built by companies like Salesforce. You know, walk down the street in downtown San Francisco and, you know, you'll see tech bros, as people call them, who are making, you know, $200,000, $300,000 a year, you know, walking right past homeless people who are living on the sidewalk for lack of anywhere else to live. And, you know, it's not just the unaffordability that I think people are imagining when they fear San Francisco. It's, you know, it's this particular sort of juxtaposition of extreme wealth and extreme poverty and everyone in between being elbowed out.
So New York is afraid of becoming Seattle. Seattle is afraid of San Francisco. And San Francisco is afraid of becoming New York. Where does that fit?
Well, so San Francisco has actually been talking, people in San Francisco have been talking about this for a very long time. You know, San Francisco historically has sort of prided itself on not having the kind of very tall, dominant skyline that Manhattan has. And, you know, going back to the 70s or so, any time a new skyscraper was proposed in the city, there was quite a lot of backlash about, you know, we want to protect the character of our city. We don't want to be exactly like Manhattan. We're proud of the fact that we're sort of different. And so Manhattanization, you know, we want to avoid Manhattanization. We don't want to become like Manhattan, has referred for a very long time there to the idea that, you know, we don't want to develop that much. We don't want to have that many skyscrapers. We don't want to be that dense.
Emily Badger's article is called Happy New Year, May Your City Never Become San Francisco, New York, or Seattle. And I haven't even read the subtitle yet, which is, or Portland, Denver, Boston, Dallas, Houston, or Los Angeles. So anyone listening from San Francisco, is it a certain kind of rich and poor dystopia? What are the lessons? 212-433-WNYC. Anyone listening from Seattle? Same question with Amazon and Microsoft there. What about the tweeness of Portland or the Manhattanization of Boston, which apparently they feel up there, fear up there? What are the paradoxes of good and bad in the major cities that you are from, listeners, or that you have connections to? And What should the lessons for New York be? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Emily Badger, who writes about cities for the New York Times. And there is also the fear, I'll throw in one other, of becoming like Portland, specifically what you refer to as the Portlandification of Brooklyn and, I guess, the Brooklynization of everywhere else. What is the Portlandification of Brooklyn?
You know, when I think when people, and all of these are sort of characters to some extent, obviously we're sort of flattening what are very complicated places, but Portland, I think, evokes for people sort of a certain kind of preciousness. And you know, sort of it refers culturally to the idea that, you know, now we're all drinking kombucha, and to the extent that anyone has jobs, their job is making artisanal pickles and selling them to their neighbors. Obviously, I'm just piling stereotypes on top of each other here, but this notion of sort of being twee, being precious, you know, I think that people in Austin sort of worry about their culture becoming a little bit too much like that culture in Portland. In my reading about things that have been written along these lines about various cities, I came across some really interesting writing about, you know, sort of Brooklyn becoming this sort of aggressive version of what happens when people make very precious things, except they're really good at like Instagramming them and promoting them and sort of aggressively marketing them. And so in this way, you know, all of these places sort of come to stand for kind of one singular idea, and invariably that singular idea is not a compliment. You know, these are sort of slurs in some sense. You don't want to become twee. You know, you don't want to become too dense. You don't want to become, you know, this crazy dystopia.
And you have Houston, too sprawling, Los Angeles, too congested, Las Vegas, too speculative, Chicago, too indebted. And in a way, all of that is funny in the kind of flattening caricature way that you said. But deep down, it's about the fundamental paradoxes of urban policy in the tech economy and even the environmentalist era. Lots of jobs, including many that pay well, and more density to encourage mass transit use and discourage cars versus the inequality and crowding that come as side effects, right?
Yeah, I mean, all of these cities that you just mentioned are incredibly successful in many ways. You know, these are cities that have some of the lowest unemployment rates, the highest wages, the fastest growing wages. Some of them are among the fastest growing population-wise cities. So, you know, if we're just sort of pulling government statistics about the economic outlook in these places, you know, all of those qualities are desirable. You know, there are many sort of Rust Belt cities, for instance, that would love to have a problem of a city like Seattle where, you know, you have so many fast-growing jobs that pay a tremendous amount of money. And so, you know, what's so interesting to me about the fact that these cities come to stand for slurs, in a sense, is that I think it reflects that, you know, many people feel this deep discomfort with urban prosperity and urban success and the idea that, you know, success comes with all of these sort of downsides that we're deeply afraid of. You know, do we really want high-paying tech jobs if it's going to mean we're going to have a housing crisis? You know, do we really want to have big tech companies based in our economy if it's going to contribute to a homelessness problem? You know, do we really want new development, more jobs, if it's just going to mean that the subway becomes more crowded, congestion gets worse? You know, what people are thinking when they're describing these cities and sort of citing them as cautionary tales, they're not thinking about the good things, they're thinking about the bad things, or to the extent that they're thinking about the good things, they're thinking about how they're inseparable from the bad things.
Because at the same time, we don't want to be Detroit or Youngstown or take your pick of all these former manufacturing cities that have become deserted, any number of places in upstate New York as well, that now don't have jobs and, you know, instead have opioid epidemics.
Yeah, I mean, there's any number of cities that stand for very different cautionary tales. Exactly, you know, what you just described, places that have population loss, where the unemployment rate is very high, you know, where there are very few jobs that that pay people a middle-class wage. And so to the same extent, you know, we hear people saying we don't want to become like Detroit, particularly after Detroit went through its bankruptcy. There were lots of stories written and commentary at the time about which city could be the next Detroit. You know, we don't want to become like Baltimore. And that's sort of a similar idea, but it gets at something a little bit different from this kind of fear of urban prosperity.
My guest, Emily Badger, who writes about cities for the New York Times, her article this week, Happy New Year, May Your City Never Become San Francisco, New York, or Seattle, and TK in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello, TK.
Oh, man. Good morning, everyone, and Happy New Year.
And to you.
My issue with the whole thing is my family lived in San Francisco for over 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up on the Mission District. I grew up eating Tex-Mex, Chinese food, and I miss all of that because everybody had to leave because they could no longer live there. They threw my grandmother out, a duplex apartment she had been living in for 20 years, right by the Golden Gate Bridge. They kept raising our rent every year. They refused to give her a 3-year lease. It became every year she had to get a new lease. And every year they would raise it. So nobody has a problem with a city growing. Nobody has a problem with people earning more money. But what people have a problem with is when people have been displaced from their homes that they've been in for decades and generations. And it's painful to have to relocate for no other reason than you can no longer afford to live in a place you were born.
Mm-hmm.
That is insane.
And so there's the paradox. Do you have any thoughts based on your family's experience about how you can have that economic growth without the displacement?
I'm experiencing it right now in New York, so I don't know because I'm moving further and further away from the city
mm-hmm.
because of the rents and everything. And I was born in the Bronx, so I'm going through the same thing right now myself.
TK, keep calling us. Thank you for that. Krista in South Orange, as we go from a San Francisco story to a Seattle story. Hi, Krista. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Amen to what the last caller spoke about. I am from Seattle, born and bred there. My parents live in the home I grew up in. They've lived there 56 years. It's on Shoshal Bay. The road was not paved that I grew up in. And there were woods all around on Shoshal. And my parents are quite frustrated now. They can't get anywhere anymore. It's too crowded. They tore down all of the sweet bungalows in Ballard. It used to be a fishing area. And they're building all these high rises. You would not recognize Ballard anymore. And my nephew says, it's dark, like New York City now, in Ballard, because you cannot see the sunlight because of all the high-rises going up in Ballard.
What's the solution? Any thoughts?
Well, I love New York City. I've lived in Tokyo, London, New York. I love big cities. I don't know what the solution is for Seattle in particular. I do think that control of growth, there was an incentive to build more, and I think that needs to be slowed down a bit. I think it's happening right now in Seattle. Finally, we're at the point where there is so much going up that I think we've peaked to an extent as far as housing. Some of the apartments in Ballard are 400, 500 square foot apartments. Very similar to, Tokyo living when I lived in Tokyo. And they're paying that much, like $4 or $5, $500,000 for that kind of an apartment. And I do think that that we are peaking at this point because now we do have an abundance of housing. It's gone very, very fast. But I would say that the hunger to build so much on growing towns was too much greed is mm-hmm. what I would say. Mm-hmm. Maybe for the future, when people look at cities like this that are have technology and all the juicy places that all the millennials can't wait to live in Seattle. On the plane coming home, I was talking to millennials. They love Seattle, mm-hmm. and that's great. You love Seattle because my neighborhood was full of old Swedes and Norwegians, and now we have a whole fresh group of people. They're going to reopen our elementary school. Those kinds of things are very nice, but the pacing, I think, in the future as far as housing and not the greed to build. Mm-hmm. So there must be more control on these things for at least places like Seattle.
Krista, thank you so much for your call. We're going to go to another caller who's going to push back on some of this, I think. Cannon in Chappaqua, you're on WNYC. Hello, Cannon.
Yes, hi. Hi, Brian, and thank you for taking my call. I have lived both in Seattle and New York and Portland, and have an urban design and urban planning background. And my point is, I mean, I understand the sentimentality of the idea that things are changing and it's not comfortable. But these are hubs that are growing at an exponential rate, and the idea is that this kind of booming economy is going to filtering down to a lot of people. What really needs to be done is there needs to be a backstop for affordable housing, and again, that is something that I am involved in, and I've done financing for affordable housing, and so I can tell you that this is something that every city needs to take very aggressively and set very high goals. And I know in New York we're doing that. I know San Francisco is really struggling with that. And the idea of not upzoning and not allowing things to change is kind of creating this unnecessary, because growth is a growth. And what is really going to happen is people who can live there are going to get pushed out unless there's a policy change or the government backstops and says, all right, this is what we need here to make this a viable sort of engineered society.
So Cannon, there's a critique from some people in New York against Mayor de Blasio's plan to just build as much housing as we can possibly build with, 20-30% guaranteed to be affordable, but build, because ultimately we have a housing shortage and we need a lot more apartment buildings and other kinds of housing. The critique is that in the Robert Moses era, when they were building highways like crazy to ease congestion, it didn't ease congestion. It just drew more cars onto the road. And that maybe there's an analogy there, that what you need to do is restrict the growth of housing, ironically, that's market rate, because otherwise you're just going to bring more and more and more rich people in, and it's going to be more and more unaffordable.
Right. I throw out one name. Ed Glaser has written a book. He's from, I think, Harvard, and wrote this very big he basically supports upzoning. And when you first read it, it does sound exactly what you said. It just sounds like it'll be intensely, intensely populist, and it will be very, very difficult to actually still control. I'm not saying this is an easy solution.
Upzoning means being able to build more high-rises, right?
And especially for some place like San Francisco, right? I mean, you are, I'm just going back to, like, I think the answers always tend to talk about the sentimentality of, oh my God, what is this going to happen to my neighborhood? It's interesting when Lady talked about Ballard. I actually did a design for Ballard, and I remember, I understand her problem. I can see what she's talking about. But here's the thing. Would you rather, there are a couple of things you can do. One is you need to densify. Two is you have to have this amount of affordable housing and housing available to all. And then third is you have to think of how satellite towns work. So, like, living in Chappaqua, I can see now how Stamford has become a viable option to have a finance job, right? And so these are the kind of things that policy-wise they need to be doing,
right?
And then having, the right infrastructure to support that.
I'm going to leave it there for time. Thank you so much for your contribution.
Sure.
With a few minutes remaining with Emily Badger, who writes about cities for The Times and has an article called Happy New Year, May Your City Never Become San Francisco, New York, or Seattle. And Emily, I'm wondering what you were thinking as you heard that series of callers with their roots in San Francisco and Seattle and Cannon there from the affordable housing development business, I guess, kind of pushing back on what she sees as sentimentality.
Yeah, I mean, the first two callers who are really sort of mourning the communities that they once knew, I mean, I think they, you know, described in a much more nuanced way the more precise fears that are bound up in saying, you know, I don't want to become like these two cities. So, you know, they're talking about the change in the culture of a place, the loss of people who used to be sort of integral parts of the population, you know, whether they're sort of artists, Latinos, immigrants, people who can't afford to live in these communities anymore, you know, this very specific fear that children won't be able to live in the communities where their parents raised them. So, what's sort of handy about saying I don't want to become Seattle or San Francisco is that it bundles up all of those fears. But I agree with Cannon that the solution to all of this isn't let's stop growth, especially if what people are talking about is let's stop building new housing, because part of the reason why San Francisco is in the problem that it's in is that it built very little housing, but it continued to add jobs. And, you know, that's what Long Island City is going to be doing with Amazon coming there. They're going to be adding a tremendous number of jobs, and if you don't add capacity for the people who are going to occupy those jobs, you know, you're really going to be adding to the problem that the region
right.
has.
Well, so, though maybe Long Island City is also an example of the opposite, because what they have been adding in Long Island City in recent years is apartments, like crazy, high-rise apartment buildings, and Long Island City has become less affordable, not more.
Right, right. Well, the problem with New York City and the problem with all of these cities, which a couple of the callers alluded to, is, you know, there's this fear that no matter how much you build, there are always more people out there somewhere else in the country who want to move to San Francisco, who want to move to New York. And so it's not as if, you know, we build 50,000 more housing units and the housing gets cheaper for everyone who already lives here because, you know, perhaps the population will grow, more people will come to occupy them, which is why I do think it's essential, as Cannon suggested, that cities be thinking really explicitly about affordable housing, about, you know, building not just more housing supply in general, but more housing that is going to be reserved for the indefinite future for people making below a certain income, making below the median income, mm-hmm. making even, you know, 30% of the median income. And, you know, these are the things that cities have not done very well, and we don't have great examples of places we can point to where we can say, you know, this city saw growth coming, it got really serious about affordable housing, it invested very heavily in transit because it knew there was going to be greater use of infrastructure, you know, it made sure it added capacity in schools. You know, cities often don't do all of those things because they're expensive. The public has to pay for them. Politicians don't want to do them. But those are the things that have to be done, I think, in order to have some of this, you know, tech-based urban prosperity without all of the downsides that the previous callers mentioned.
Emily Badger's article is called Happy New Year, May Your City Never Become San Francisco, New York, or Seattle, or Portland, Denver, Boston, Dallas, Houston, or Los Angeles. Emily, this is one of the biggest conversations that we need to have in our city and in our various cities in the modern economy. Thank you for casting an interesting eye on it and coming on with us. Let's do it again.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.